This is the new era. This is the new band, and we're unbreakable.
We can rebuild him. We have the technology. We can make him better than he was. Better, stronger, faster. Actually, better, stronger,
is that
faster.
Is line from Starship Troopers or something?
No, it's actually the Million Dollar Man.
$6 Million Man. I know that, and
I don't even know what that is.
We Brits don't do excitement, so this is the best you're going to get.
Chris is bringing the noise today, apparently.
Speaking of vanilla.
It's just, I don't understand why.
I don't think anyone does. I don't think Travis Green understands.
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust. This is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and CKNW.com. Here they are, fresh from folding towels, sharpening skates, and washing jock straps. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast. I am Chris Golden at Lightforce, joined virtually by Matt Lee at Matt Lee_61, Adam Ovenell Carter at Adam FOC, and Anna Forsyth at A Forsyth 03. And you can't begin to understand how difficult it's been for the four of us to get together virtually in such a way that it works. Now, if our producer extraordinaire Matt had some chops, this wouldn't be a problem, right, Matt?
First of all, I am making do with the best of what I have. First of all, you are in Steveston. Anna is somewhere else in Vancouver. I am also in Vancouver. Adam is in Bowen Island with God knows what kind of quality Wi-Fi. I myself am doing the best I can. We're trying something out experimentally. Long story short, technical difficulties can make this very difficult for all four of us to be in the same place at once. So we're going to do our best to direct questions to one another to avoid having that echo. So I will flip it over to Adam and ask, Adam, how was your Christmas and your New Year's?
It was a busy one, man. We did the whole four Christmases. Myself and my girlfriend come from broken homes. So we did the whole Vince Vaughn movie experience. It was crazy. It was busy, but it was fun. New Year's, had a big thing over at my place. Sorry, I forgot to send you the invite. But it was fun. First day back at work today. No kids yet. That starts tomorrow. But, you know, I guess finally after 2.5 weeks, I should probably get back to work. Anna, you, did you go home?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to go home for 9 days. So it was a bit of a whirlwind. I too come from a broken home. So kind of shuttling between my mom and my dad and various other people that wanted to see me in the brief time I was home. But yeah, it was good. Very family oriented. I cuddled the cat a lot. So, you know, that's really about it. But I imagine Chris had quite the magical Christmas with Baby Force.
It was pretty cool. And I am glad that the family was healthy this Christmas. So last holiday season, all of us were sick. Unfortunately, though, it didn't take very long for me to get sick. I had the flu, which is why we didn't have an episode last week. And then, again, not to throw producer unextraordinaire Matt Lee under the bus, but he forgot to press record on our special holiday episode, which is why patrons, those of you who might have seen, I did one solo. It was like, what, 40 minutes of Chris, which in my mind is awesome. But Matt, you know, maybe I remembered to press record, hopefully, this time.
I would gently say 40 minutes of Chris is about 40 minutes too much. That is way too much Chris to have in. We won't take up too much of your time. I know that this process is kind of difficult for the listeners, of course, but my Christmas was great. I had a great New Year's as well. Kind of crappy with the New Year's Eve game, Canada versus Russia. And of course, we'll get into the World Juniors talk a little bit later on, but the experience itself was phenomenal. I'm looking forward to talking to World Juniors with all of you, especially Adam, of course, who I know has plenty of thoughts. We'll also talk about the Elias Pettersson injury number 2. Was it an accident, or did Jesperi Kotkaniemi just see a chance to steal the Calder Trophy away from our Elias Pettersson? We'll talk about that as well. Chris, as we move into the rewind, we will hit the rewind button, and then we will get right into rewind. Chris?
So, now that we're here in Rewind, why don't we talk about World Juniors first? Now, I would like to point out, Matt, you were at the game and they lost. And I don't know if there's a direct correlation to the loss to Russia, but it was, I'm going to blame you, 100% your fault.
I will not take blame for that, Christopher. I will say that Russia was just better defensively, and I'll let Adam speak on this after I finish, but I would say that Canada just became pretty predictable in that Russia game, and then consequentially, later on in the semifinal game, or the quarterfinal game against Finland, just so predictable offensively. There was a lot of chip and chase, and I felt that Tim Hunter failed to adapt to that style, that the Russians and Finns were starting to catch on to that kind of system from the Canadians. And just defensively, I thought they were a bit of a train wreck in that game, and especially in the Finland game. They were just a one-trick pony by the end of it, but Adam, maybe you can attest to it. What did you find in the Canadian game, in the Russia game, as well as the quarterfinal game?
Well, I think, Matt, to take some heat off you, I was at the Finland game in the preliminary round, I guess a pre-tournament series, whatever you want to call it, when they lost 5-2, so... if anyone's to blame here, it's probably me. But even at that game, I went with a fellow teacher, and he predicted Canada was going to finish sixth in the tournament. He totally called it. I was a little more optimistic. Maybe that's just my bias, but they just didn't look good from the start. I know it was pre-tournament, but the power play was static. They gave up a terrible shorthanded goal. I mean, Evan Bouchard, will get into him, or maybe we won't. Who needs to? But they just never adjusted, Matt. You kind of touched on it. No, at no point in the tournament did Hunter be like, this is what we have, this is what's going wrong, this is where we need to change. I found it was always just trying to do his thing, and it just never worked. Maybe you can touch on a little bit more. I actually didn't see the Canada-Russia game. I was prepping for my New Year's party, but and then when they lost, I didn't really want to watch the highlights. But the game against Finland, it was the same kind of thing. They had one goal, which they scored against the grain, I think you'd say, and then they tried to, it was like watching the Canucks a few years ago, you know, they would get that one goal lead and then they'd try to collapse for 50 minutes, and it just was tough to watch. And yeah, Matt, maybe you can touch a little more on that. But I just wasn't impressed really with anything other than Mikey DiPietro.
Well, I mean, whether it be the game against the Russians or the fact that they got eliminated by Finland, it felt to me like the team wasn't playing like a team. So, you know, Matt, and you were there, how much of that had to do with coaching? Like, was this a Tim Hunter issue?
I think it was a little bit of a Tim Hunter issue, but it was also just a personnel issue. And I think there was a great stat from TSN talking about how essentially teams that have the best power play are the ones that end up being the most successful at the World Juniors. And Adam touched on this a little bit. The Canadian power play just never found their groove. And you think about that, like, that big 14-0 win over Denmark. I mean, it was Denmark. They didn't score a freaking goal in the entire tournament. And so for me, I just... their power play never found its groove, and you look at the personnel up front. I look at Canada's forward group as a whole, you know, Morgan Frost, Maxime Comtois, Nick Suzuki, these were all kind of great players, but they weren't really elite type of players that you're used to seeing at the World Juniors. And for me, that was probably one of the biggest ingredients that was missing, is that there wasn't a real stud up front that Canada could lean on. It was just a crop of good to very good players up front that couldn't really take a game by the horn. So I'll let Adam talk next.
Matt, you kind of stole my point there. I was going to say that this is the one tournament in a while that I can really remember where Canada didn't have that one true stud. It was kind of built up of a whole bunch of grinders, really, at this stage of their careers, I guess. And it showed. There was never a guy you could lean on, you know, obviously not Tavares level, but there was never a guy that you could be like, okay, we need a goal, we're going to go and get it. And so the only superstar, I don't even know if you want to call him superstar, but the best player by far on the team throughout the entire tournament was Michael DiPietro. And it was tragic to see him lose the way he did. That was one of the best goalie performances I've seen. My friend, my old roommate, actually, he was visiting from Ontario, and he's been in Vietnam for the past few years teaching, but he was actually at the game against Finland, and he said, the goalie was amazing. Who drafted him? And he's a Leafs fan, and he hates the Canucks, and he had no idea. So totally unbiased, he just couldn't stop talking about how good DiPietro was, and that moment with his mom crying when the crowd was chanting his name was pretty special, and it just was flushed by a poor showing from everyone else, from the players to the coaches. Chris, maybe you want to go a little more there, but yeah, feel free.
Well, I think it's telling that during the Russia game, you know, Matt, you're giving us a blow by blow, and even during Finland, and one of the common denominators was that Canada was giving the puck away far too easy. I think as far as the blue line goes, it was probably the weakest collection of players. To your point, Adam, DiPietro played out of his mind. You know, I know he took some heat over the goal against Russia, but in all fairness, I mean, the fact that that puck went in required significant luck. In fact, you know, even the goal from Finland, same kind of concept. I still am struggling to understand that. Yeah, okay, maybe Canada didn't have that player or the set of players that could go and be that differentiator, but here we are with a penalty shot in overtime, and the coach's selection is the team captain, the only returning player, and one who is not known for his skill. There is a laundry list of players that should be going to that puck before Comtois. And if you were to tell me that, oh, I'm going to go and I'm going to choose the captain, and he knows what needs to be done, I'm sorry, that's no different than Mark Crawford trotting out Wayne Gretzky in the Olympics.
Should I go? I was going to say Anna can go next, but I would quickly say, just to wrap things up from my perspective on the World Juniors, echoing what Adam said on Mikey DiPietro, it was probably the most, I would say, kind of bittersweet kind of moment is that last game against Finland, because DiPietro was standing on his head in that game. He was giving Canada a chance to win the game. And then just such a fluke goal to tie the game. Canada literally 45 seconds and change away from eliminating the Finns. And, you know, you look at the Finns, they obviously won the gold medal over Team USA and Quinn Hughes, who we can talk about a little bit as well. But for me, it shows you that's how close it was, is that Canada was 45 seconds away from closing out the Finns. They could have probably set themselves up for a Canada-USA gold medal game. It would have been a spectacular game, of course, as well. But that's how close these World Junior tournaments have become. It's a simple bounce that went Ili Tovanen's way to get that tying goal, and it was so heart-wrenching for DiPietro, and to watch his family in the stands to watch that, I thought they were just as crushed as DiPietro was. And I know you got some thoughts, so I'll let you go.
What I'm really interested in is the prospects. And from my perspective, like, DiPietro just stood up. And I think it's really encouraging. And it was really, yeah, heart-wrenching to see his loss there. But really, it's nothing but encouraging that he's risen up from being cut to, like, really showing on the world stage. And as a tournament, I just don't think it was a huge, big, starry tournament. But, like, Hughes has really been the closest for me in terms of, like, actually star showing there. Whereas, like, the Finns got it done with just a really grindy game, and then they just had the puck luck go their way in a short tournament like that, where there's no real stars standing out, then sometimes that can be the difference. But I think Chris is going to give a few more thoughts on Quinn Hughes.
Well, I don't want to give any more thoughts on Hughes outside of the fact that I do believe the Vancouver Canucks are playing him out of contention of having the Hughes brothers. Why don't I toss this one over to Matt, who's obviously far more an expert at World Junior coverage than I am.
Okay, so I would just simply mention that with respect to Quinn Hughes, I thought he was one of the better players in the tournament, and I think Corey Pronman from The Athletic summed it up best. It was Quinn Hughes was so good, but you didn't really see it on the score sheet. He didn't put up a lot of points, but I believe he played the most ice time out of any of the USA players. Clearly, when he had the puck, I think watching Quinn Hughes in a vacuum at the World Juniors, Canuck fans should be excited, because almost every time he was out there, again, that team had the puck. And in a game where it is almost all possession-driven, that is very good for the Vancouver Canucks because they desperately need someone on the back end who can be that driver, that possession driver for them. And I think it's not simply about numbers. It's about just holding the puck. And I think Quinn Hughes can bring that in spades for the Canucks. Adam, your thoughts on Hughes?
Yeah, he was one of those guys, like Pronman said, that even, you know, is when you're not noticing him, that's speaking volumes about his play. There were still so many times where he rushed the puck up or crazy zone entries or dangled the puck around the entire offensive zone and set his brother or Wahlstrom or somebody up. And he looked every bit the part. There were some ups and downs, maybe a little more than I expected, but he was still a star and looks every part of a future NHL star. Size be damned. The one player I really want to talk about is Tyler Madden. And I thought he had an amazing tournament. Took me by surprise. I think took a lot of people by surprise. Again, didn't necessarily score or show up so much on the score sheet. He had a few points, a few goals and assists, but he looked like a fantastic, middle six kind of player. I don't know if I have a comparison off the top of my head, but one of those guys who can do the dirty work, but can also put the puck in the net and make plays and set up his teammates and everything like that. So whoever wants to after this takeover, feel free. But I just think that Tyler Madden was the surprise of the tournament for me and really justified his selection in the third round, especially over Jake Wise, and just further proof that we need to trust in Judd.
I would also echo that statement. We talked about this in Discord a little bit, guys, but there was a time at the 2018 draft where Jake Wise was available and we chose Tyler Madden, and I was, I don't want to say disappointed, but I certainly was expecting or hoping that the Canucks were going to take Jake Wise. And admittedly, I didn't know too much about Tyler Madden except for the fact that he was the son of John Madden. You look at what Tyler Madden brought to the table for Team USA, and when Jack Hughes went down with an injury, it was Tyler Madden who stepped up. He played that primary top six role that Jack Hughes was expected to play while he was out, and I thought he acquitted himself quite well. You look at Madden as a third-round pick of the Vancouver Canucks in 2018, and what he's doing right now with Northeastern, which is where Adam Gaudette played his college. I'm pretty excited about how Tyler Madden's stock is going to rise over the next couple years, and I think that by no means is he a lock to be an NHL player, but his stock has certainly improved a lot more over the course of the World Juniors, and I think it's probably improved dramatically compared to some of the other players across the board in the World Juniors, whether you're draft eligible or you've been drafted already. I think Tyler Madden's stock is among those that rose the most. Chris, you want to wrap things up for us here on the World Juniors talk?
Well, I think one of the things that we should talk to about the World Juniors is the fact that the Vancouver Canucks have also been playing, even though they haven't been at home. They're on a six-game road trip. And arguably, they come home 500. They got three wins and three losses.
I would point out, the Dad Lee talked to Bo Horvat after he came back on that road trip, and he said that they were pretty happy with the going 500.
Oh, yeah, I think it would make sense they'd be happy. And this is a team that got, three tough wins. I mean, they got two in overtime, one against the Sens and the other one against the Flames. They beat the Edmonton Oilers. So theoretically, the two games they needed to win, Calgary, Edmonton, they got their points. Probably didn't want to give up that extra one to Calgary. But would you be concerning about how they lost? They lost a listless game to the New Jersey Devils, a listless game to the Montreal Canadiens, and they just got spanked by the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, Chris, you kind of took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to come at you for saying, and Horvat too, for saying it was a successful road trip, being happy with going 500. Because not all 500s are created equal, I think. You can, the game against Ottawa was great, save for giving up the late goals, but to be shut out in three of your last four, I know Pedersen went down, but that's still not an excuse. Like, the Canucks have just looked bad. I know it's the end of a lengthy road trip, but it's just been bad to watch, bad on the power play, can't move the puck up, can't do anything productive, really, and it's just been tough to watch and kind of, I think, what we expect. I'm not saying the Canucks are what we expected now at the beginning of the season, but that they're looking like what we expected them to be. They're obviously not going to not score forever, but I think it just goes to show how far this team still has to go. There's lots of reasons for optimism, and sometimes when the Canucks get a little bit of streak, start creeping up on a playoff spot, we might get a little ahead of ourselves, but there's still a long way to go for this team. There's still a lot of holes and a lot of places to improve on. So it's tough to be too excited, or even with a 500 record, it's tough to be excited with the way this road trip was for me, at least. Anna, if you wanna add to that, feel free.
Yeah, I think I just to echo what Adam said. I think just the way that once Canucks are out of game, they just seem to be really out. It's kind of just disappointing. They seem to be such confidence players. When they get behind, they just don't see a way back into the game, and the defense just kind of crumbles pretty easily. And once Pedersen was out, it really seemed to deflate the whole team. And obviously he's a key player, but we do actually have skill beyond that, and it's disappointing to see the way that the team really can't play in any kind of sustainable way. And when they do win the games, it just seems to be on momentum more than anything else. So it just sets up for a bit of a long season. I don't know what you think about that, Matt.
Okay, well, I would just say that it's pretty clear that Pedersen's injury is not as serious as we had all feared it could have been. Let's talk about the injury, though, and the circumstances leading up to it, just to replay, if you obviously haven't seen it. I'm sure every single person and their dog has, but it seems clear that Kotkaniemi hooks at Pedersen's stomach, tries to haul him down, and they just sort of get tangled up in each other. I'm not going to by any means say that it was in a malicious nature from Kotkaniemi, but clearly the result was that Pedersen's knee bent in a way that knees should not bend. You know, Chris, I'll let you unmute yourself and let's talk about this, but this is now the second time that Pedersen has been hurt by hook or by crook. First Mike Matheson and now Jesperi Kotkaniemi in a tangled up play. Obviously, the two incidents are super different from each other, but is there anything now to be said with two incidents about quote unquote protecting Pedersen?
Well, if you're listening to Don Cherry, Pedersen's looking for trouble. He's putting himself into harm's way. As far as protecting the player, though, the Mike Matheson or Matheson hit and the Kotkaniemi, which I'm sorry, I struggle with that double-barreled name. As you had said, they're two different scenarios. I don't necessarily believe the enforcer is required for what we saw happen in Montreal. To me, it was just a bad play, and for anyone who wants to go and tell me that it was malicious or vicious, I watch it time and time again. If it was, then why are the Vancouver Canucks right to a man, to a coach, telling you that it was just a bad sequence of events? It should have been a penalty. I don't know how that's not hooking, interference, you name it. The other thing, though, that was brought up about the enforcer is that do players go and initiate anything with Pedersen if there was the worry of a Gina Ojic on the ice? You know, you think back in the day, there is a reason why Pavel Bure got a lot of the freedom. That and the fact that Pavel swung a mean piece of lumber.
So right, you don't think that the Canucks need a Gino Ojic right now?
Well, I'm not saying that they don't need. I actually feel if they had someone that could go out and ultimately make a statement to protect Pedersen, I don't see how that is so much of a problem. I'm not suggesting having a Probert or in Edmonton,
maybe like a guy who like can like play big and be a bit of a policeman, if you will. Like you think about like Patrick Maroon for Connor McDavid last year. There are some other examples I can think of, but not off the top of my head. But you're looking for a big player who can not only be that sort of enforcer, but can also play as well. I mean, is that not unreasonable at this point?
Well, where's Roussel? Where's Gudbranson? We actually were talking about this in Discord. What is Eric Gudbranson good for? To me, there's a perfect opportunity for him to go and insert himself. You know who went and tried to assert himself? Was Hutton. Although Kotkaniemi took a vicious swing at Hutton afterwards that got seemingly ignored. I think that's where the Canucks already have players that could potentially do it. But for whatever reason, and maybe this has to do with team culture, there doesn't seem to be any desire. Or no one's paying attention to the game because they obviously miss things when they happen.
I think Chris raises a good point. Just the fact that, one, the game has moved on from, like, Bure. Like, we can't have enforcers on the roster anymore. So ideal scenario, we want someone who's tough and can play. But the fact, I think what makes it worse, like, Pedersen is always going to get targeted because he is that much more skilled than the rest of the team, often the rest of the league. So he is going to always be a target, but it's more the attitude that I find the problem. We don't necessarily need someone to sock the guys that go after Pedersen, but just some reaction, and the way they talk about it after the incidents afterwards is really doesn't help the team. I'm going to let Adam jump in here with his thoughts.
It's tough for me because I think Anna, you're, and Chris, you're both right. Like, there is no room for those goons, and it's just a waste of space. But for me, like, these things are always going to happen. Crosby's going to get his jaw broken or get a concussion. McDavid's collarbone got broken. I know that was before Lucic or Maroon were there. But, like, these things are going to happen. And the play on Pedersen wasn't malicious. Like, it's one thing when there's a dirty hit and somebody immediately drops the gloves and grabs the guy, right? You can react to that. But I think, like, it was a penalty. It was a hooking penalty, tripping penalty, whatever you want to call it. But it wasn't a malicious play. And, like, those things, as much as it's a dumb infraction to be taking on a guy without the puck, like, there's no way to guard against that. And once that happens, like, it's not one of the things you see that, and then you're not going to have Gudbranson or Vertanen or anybody just go and jump the guy. It's just because I don't think it's that type of play. And then you see it all the time in other sports. When there is a big injury, it's deflating. When there's a big incident and a dirty thing, that's, you can see rough stuff and fisticuffs and all that kind of stuff. But on such an inauspicious play, I think that it's one of those things. And then you see in Pedersen being helped off the ice. Like, that's it's not one thing where you can react instantly and then you're deflated. And so I think that played a role in the result of that specific game. But I think that's just kind of how it is, and it's unfortunate, and there's nothing you can really do about it. Chris, you can go ahead, but I just don't know what you can do to prevent things like that.
Well, it's not so much, you know, going out and reacting. I think it's more setting the tone early on, where, you know, if someone... And actually, I mean, look at nearly every game on this road trip. Pedersen got very little space and room on the ice. He had a shadow that was essentially sitting in his pocket the entire game. I feel the Canucks have players who can go and at least whisper in that opposition player's ear, just so you know I'm watching you, or something along those lines. Be intimidating. You know, it's that blue-collar style of hockey that I think the Vancouver Canucks seem to be missing. Or they talk about having it and having these role players that don't seem to ever perform to that role. Enough of the Pedersen talk, though, because the other thing that occurred on this road trip...
Can I just say on the Pedersen thing, and we'll wrap up Pedersen one more minute, but
fine.
I think we can safely say that this was a bit of a warning shot, but obviously we avoided what could have been a very worst case scenario with respect to Pedersen. And, you know, a slight sprain in the MCL, 1 to 2 weeks, there's maybe a chance, according to the Dad Lee, that Pedersen could be back as early as this Thursday against the Arizona Coyotes.
So, wait, did we just, you know, break that news?
Okay, so I would say, the long story short, the Dad Lee talked to Bo Horvat as soon as he came back and said that he thinks there's a chance Pedersen plays as early as Thursday. But I would simply say that with Pedersen, these are now two incidents now where, you know, he's been involved in these kind of injuries, and I'm not going to say I'm alarmed, but it is a bit of a red flag for me just because I don't want to see the guy who is our franchise getting hurt. I don't know what can be done, and I'm not necessarily condoning saying, like, we should get a Patrick Maroon or a Milan Lucic, but there needs to be someone on this team that will hold players for accountable actions, not necessarily what Kotkaniemi did, but accountable actions on Pedersen in the future.
Fair enough.
Okay.
So,
moving on.
Back to the point that I was also going to raise, is that the Vancouver Canucks actually facilitated what I have to arguably say was a good trade.
Demko!
Okay, yeah, well, but it's a trade that did have some Canuck-like fallout. Yeah,
okay, well, sure. So just to recap, if you happen to be living under a rock. So the Vancouver Canucks and the Ottawa Senators, they did some business. Now,
peace be with you, Anders Nielsen.
Yes, which he simply had to go and walk to the opposite dressing room as Mike McKenna. Do you guys remember the Mike McKenna era here in Vancouver? Oh,
former Canuck legend Mike McKenna.
He had to come over to Vancouver, so this is the swap of the goaltenders. And then the Vancouver Canucks also sent Darren Archibald to the Senators. So much to the chagrin of a Washington Canuck fan in Discord, friend of the show Josh Gold. But not only did the Canucks get Tom Pyatt back for Darren Archibald, they got a sixth round draft pick in 2019. So the Vancouver Canucks, for those keeping score at home, not only were able to go and free up the roster spot to get Demko up, as you know Matt has excitedly told us, they also freed up $1.725 million in cap space.
Well, that's plenty of money that will go right into Erik Karlsson's pocket in the summer.
But, you know, this is a good Jim Benning deal. Like, I was blown away. Now, how much of that has to do with Jim Benning? How much of that has to do with Peter Dorion? And how much does that actually have to do with maybe us or myself not giving, you know, GMJB the credit he maybe deserves?
I think that the most accurate sort of statement that I've been reading is that the Canucks essentially bought a sixth round draft pick for the cost of Anders Nielsen's contract.
And right, which isn't Nielsen, a bad thing.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, just saying it's no bad thing. Like, even if the draft pick alone is just good enough for me.
But that's the thing, is the Vancouver Canucks got cap space. Ottawa took a goaltender, a higher cap hit, and essentially gave up a draft pick for the purpose of doing it. Like, it's not like the Vancouver Canucks ate contract there. They didn't.
It saved Pierre Dorion money on the cost of flying Anders Nielsen out to Ottawa.
Well, okay, there we go. We saved them the price of airfare. Like, and okay, it was a green trade.
It was an environmentally friendly trade.
Okay, we're reaching here. The fact that we're reaching to try to talk me down off the GMJB bandwagon.
Okay, so I'll defer this question over to Adam, but your thoughts on what we can expect from Thatcher Demko going into what we can say is the Thatcher Demko era? Like, how soon do we see Demko in action? Does he cement himself early? Can he make a statement for himself to be saying, I should be the starter going into next year? What do you think, Adam?
I think he's probably going to start off similar as, like, being Nielsen to Markstrom, like that kind of workload, with a chance to grow considerably. Markstrom has been hot lately, the Toronto game excluded. So there's no reason to not let him keep playing, right? And until he falters, and then roll with the hot hand, I think, with where the Canucks are in the standings and everything. But give him every chance. If he proves himself, give him more time. And he's been playing very well in the AHL. He had an amazing year last year, and he's kind of proven everything there is to prove there, that there's no challenge anymore. And I think there was some uneasiness or some restlessness with both the Canucks and the Demko camp to get things going, just because there was nothing left for him down there. So like you said, it's the beginning of the Demko era. I don't think it's going to be immediate. We have one NHL game from him, and it was nothing special really. But you know, it's exciting to finally have direction in net after a few years of middling goaltenders with Demko and obviously DiPietro. But yeah, I think it's going to be a bit of a slow process. I think, I don't want to say he's got the upper hand in terms of being the number one next year. I think he has to prove it and win it from Markstrom still. But I think he'll be given every chance to. So Matt, if you want to take over and finish this out, then go ahead.
Well, all I was going to say is that, one, we've got the Demko era beginning, and we didn't really touch on it, the fact that Mike McKenna got placed on waivers for the purposes of freeing up the space for Demko, and McKenna got picked up by the Philadelphia Flyers.
Did they run into each other at the airport, too? I think I saw the picture, right? Like, the two of them.
No, they might have. I mean, yeah. McKenna's played for, like, 20 teams now and is the 38th goaltender to play in the Flyers organization this year.
I would quickly say on Demko, my first thought was that Demko would get the Corey Schneider to the Roberto Luongo treatment, but I think that there's actually a chance that Demko can sort of assert himself more so than Schneider did in the Schneider-Luongo era, or at least the beginning of it.
Are you inferring that Demko is Schneider and Markstrom's Luongo?
Yeah, in terms of like playing time right now, because I expect that Markstrom gets about 75-80% of the games, the remainder of the games. But I do think next year it could be an all bets off kind of a scenario between the two goaltenders. I'll let you wrap things up.
Yeah, well, definitely interesting point. As I had raised on Twitter, won't it be a great time when we're arguing over which chant the Vancouver Canucks should have, DiPietro or Demko? I mean, that's the true Schneider Luongo.
How about Thatcher Demko? You know, Thatcher Demko.
Okay, well now it's just throwing things completely off the rails. Thanks, Matt.
But we don't do the Jacob Marks. Never mind, it's not gonna work. Don't make me start chanting. You know, I was the one who liked the Viking clap when I came back.
I was gonna say the chant is just Marky. That's what happens.
Yeah, and remember
that works better.
You're listening to us here at the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
Okay, so we kick off half full, half empty. And to start the week, guys, we heard a lot of talk to Alex Edler about being in a trade. And stop me if you've heard this conversation before, Chris, but it seems like every year around this time, Alex Edler gets popped up in trade discussions. We've talked about this a couple podcasts ago, but I just cannot see Alex Edler going anywhere.
Well, he's making comments about he really enjoys the city. He loves the team. He's been here his whole career. It totally sounds like a guy who's really willing to, quote unquote, waive his no whatever clause he's got. Is it NMC? Is it NMC or NNTC?
Waive your no trade. Waive your no trade.
Yeah, I think the Los Angeles might pull that one up out on the next game.
Oh man, that would be brutal. I would love to hear it. I truly would, but that would be brutal.
It is brutal. He's just gonna punch his time clock. Like, he's just gonna show up and go home again. Like, I don't see him going anywhere either, honestly.
I would just say this though, for all the talk that we have, and I'm as big a I'm as big a fan of trading Alex Edler as anybody is out there, but you got to admit, especially having watched the overtime against the Senators, Alex Edler just looks good. Like, he's finding ways to get the puck up ice very quickly, and I don't know if anybody could do this, but he's just good at getting the puck to Pettersson and or Besser on the power play.
Wouldn't you love him? Is it in a second pairing or third pairing role?
If you're a contender, are you talking as if
from a standpoint, and I think that's where sort of the, you know, his role in the Vancouver Canucks right now is, you know, completely misused. But that's not to suggest that there's anyone to take his place. I think where the Canucks are and where they're going to be next year and the year after that, the best thing for the organization is that Edler gets sent somewhere for something. And yet, if he doesn't wish to leave, because again, all the power happens to be in his pocket with the contract he signed, it does a disservice. The other thing, and I just want to, before I throw it over to Adam here, just to point out, is the fact that Kevin Bieksa, and I want to talk about him after we get back from Adam, he looked like he can play. I would prefer to have a Kevin Bieksa than a few of the blue liners. But Adam, your thoughts?
Well, to your point, Chris, Kevin Bieksa is one of those guys that could definitely stand up for the rest of the team if we still had him around. But anyway, back to Edler. I don't know if it's breaking news today, but I saw that the Canucks and Edler are in conversations about possibly a contract extension or what's going to happen, and it's now become a front burner issue, is the term I used, or term I saw, sorry. But I also think there's a possibility that they could have this, you know, kind of gentleman's agreement that, hey, wait, if you do want to stay in Vancouver, you know, short or long-term deal, then how about we trade you away for a few months, you maybe go win a cup, and then you come back to Vancouver with your family and everything like that. There's been talk of that. I don't know how realistic it is, but the fact that the Canucks are talking, with Edler's camp makes me think that there's at least a possibility that they're having that conversation. So I don't know who wants to take over, but do you guys think that's a reasonable thing? Am I being outlandish here? Not in terms of that actually happening, because I think it's a possibility, but do you think that would ever happen with Edler and the Canucks?
Yeah, the thing is, it's just such a hard agreement to make, whether you would just say so much changes in a few months, and there's no guarantee, like, a few months away would actually do anything. Like, there's no guarantee he wins a cup or even gets somewhat close, but I just think it's a hard way to make, especially as you can't really put pen to paper on a deal like that. It's kind of what we wanted for...
What, are you telling me they don't have gentlemen's agreements in the NHL?
Isn't that what Thomas Plekanec had with the Montreal Canadiens last deadline? I'm pretty sure.
Well, as to Anna's point, there is nothing official, but considering players have been able to sign complex agreements within seconds of free agency, I am outright positive there's a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge, hey, buddy, going on all the time. So
don't get me wrong, though. I think that there could be a gentleman's agreement in place between the two parties. If you're Alex Edler, you have no guarantees that they would honor that agreement either.
Yeah, and just like what's the incentive really for either side of things? Like the Canucks, if it's well known that Alex Edler's coming back, what does Alex Edler get for playing for a team for a couple months? I don't know. Well, and why would you go if you're Edler, given how uncertain it is?
Well, I think there are cup contenders that would love an Alex Edler. Like, hell, do you think the Toronto Maple Leafs would look at Alex Edler if he was available and say, yeah, our blue line couldn't use that?
I actually do think Edler looks pretty good this season, but also it's because of what our blue line looks like.
I would say, and I know Adam wants to talk about Chris Tanev next after this, but in mapping out the best and worst case scenarios for what to do with Alex Edler from a Canucks perspective, the best case scenario is that you do have that gentleman's agreement with Alex Edler. You trade him to a contender, like let's say the Toronto Maple Leafs, for a defensive prospect like Timothy Liljegren. You have that gentleman's agreement. You bring him back in the offseason, maybe at a 2 to 3 year term. That's the best case agreement. The worst case agreement is that he stays a Vancouver Canuck and that we don't get anything for him. He is the best tradable asset that we have outside of Chris Tanev. And I know Adam wants to talk about Tanev, so I'll let Adam talk about it. But Adam, do you agree that's the best and worst case scenario? And what do you think about Chris Tanev?
I mean, Liljegren would be a coup. There's no way that would ever happen. I think that's just a little too rich. But I didn't necessarily want to talk about Tanev. I just wanted to put it out to you guys and whether or not you see Tanev being attractive to teams again like Toronto, who could fill that, you know, be that elite second pairing player, if you will, if that makes any sense. But just do you see either Edler or Tanev or neither going? What do you think the realistic possibility is here?
I mean, for me, I've accepted that this is going to be a time when the Canucks just don't trade either Edler or Tanev. I mean, that's been my expectation now as a Canucks fan. And you can call it jaded if you want, guys. But Chris, what do you think? Have you expected Tanev or Edler to ever not be a Canuck?
Well, I think Chris Tanev...
Yeah, but even that's getting less and less likely that he'll move.
I think actually the market for Chris Tanev is smaller than it is for Alex Edler. You guys can call me crazy if you want, but I just think Edler has clearly been at least quote unquote less injury prone than Chris Tanev has.
And Edler has had his injury problems, no doubt, but he's kind of had a longer proven.
And Edler's got more of a two-way game compared to Tanev as well.
Yeah, Tanev is way more stay at home. So even though I think a team would be lucky to get him, it's a big risk for a team to take.
Yeah, but Tanev is also the easier resource of the two to trade. He can only tell the Canucks 8 teams he does not want to go to as part
of his modifying. He costs less.
And then the counterpoint to that, though, is that while Edler is a UFA at the end of the year, Tanev has an additional year. So I think Tanev goes to a team that feels that he has the role moving forward. Whereas Edler is the epitome of the rental. You need a solid you know, blue liner, and he's the guy that you'd probably try to make a play for. Or maybe someone will do the Canucks a favor and take good Branson off our hands.
Yeah, I highly doubt that's going to happen.
Dream on, Chris.
Talk about best case and worst case scenarios. Trading Gudbranson is the best case scenario right now. Like, give me anything for Eric Gudbranson. And let's talk about this right now. You mentioned it. Kevin Bieksa. The guy was on After Hours. He looks like he can still play.
Well, did you not see his play in the Spengler Cup?
Well, I saw the hit that he had on Anders Ambule of HC Davos.
Yeah, what a hit.
More than the hit.
Looked like me in my beer league, am I right?
Yeah, you getting laid out. I still think Bieksa provides the Vancouver Canucks more than a Delzato does, more than a Gudbranson has been providing.
We just talked about a policeman for Elias Pettersson. Would Bieksa not be the perfect one? Like Bieksa fought a guy in a bar and knocked him out.
He knocked Zach Kassian out in a lift, which we never got to the bottom of. But
you mean an elevator?
But like, honestly, just because you bring up Delzato and you bring up Eric Gudbranson, they're not doing like their even one part of their job, right? Eric Branson's one part of his job would be the toughness, and Delzato outside of like the defense, which he's not doing, like because he's trying to be offensive and he's not producing there. So, yeah, I honestly, if Ken Biatz just was there, like as bottom pairing,
could do the job of Gudbranson and Delzato for a fraction of the cost, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Call me crazy. I mean, Chris, do you disagree? I mean, I still think, like, Bieksa is a free asset out there, and we're out here with Derek Pouliot?
Okay, I'd like to point out that I was the one suggesting Bieksa come back to the Vancouver Canucks before the season even started.
I always want him back.
Though, does Bieksa come back? Bieksa made it very clear in After Hours he is looking for the right role, and I think it's important to understand that, you know, Kevin is probably wanting to play for the contender.
Do you think that the Canucks asked? Well, I know Adam wants to talk, but...
Have the Canucks asked? No, I don't think they will. I actually don't think the Vancouver Canucks go and ask because they are tied up right now with the Gudbranson long-term, Delzato upstairs. Like, there just isn't that opportunity. I think Bieksa going to Toronto probably has greater chance of happening than an Edler going there. But Adam, your thoughts?
I just think you guys are reading way too much into the Spengler Cup. Bieksa has, like, I love the guy. He's been one of my favorites for years, but he was bad the past few years in Anaheim. He was not good. And I know Gudbranson and Delzato are terrible, and like you said, Anna, don't provide anything positive to the team. But other than kind of fan favorites or fan favoriteness or whatever you want to call it, nostalgia, Bieksa would not add a positive impact to the team, I don't think. Like, it's the Spengler Cup. That's where people go when they're washed up and will never play in the NHL again. Anyway, I love Bieksa, but that's just where I stand. So I will throw back to Chris, and he can take it from there.
Fan favorite or not, I still would love to see Juice retire as a Vancouver Canuck and at least get one more shift skating around with the orc on the chest. But as we wrap things up with another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, I do want to give a special shout out to our newest patron who is helping support the podcast with a $2 a month patron support, and that is my good friend Morgan. I actually ran into him over the holidays, and soon after that,
he's our good friend now. Chris.
Exactly. I mean, it's not
one
just
of us. One of us. One of us.
Chris, you guilted him into supporting us. I mean, no. I'm okay with it, but
no. I was just chatting hockey, and he's a fan, and I'd mentioned the podcast. He's like, oh yeah, you know, I'd totally like to check it out. And yeah, he's supporting the pod now. So for that $2 per month, that gets him at that shout out. So Morgan, thanks for listening in. If you want to be just like Morgan and support the pod and get that shout out, you can, for $2 a month yourself, be able to do it. We've got other tiers as well. For those who chip in $5 a month or more, and those who we call are exclusively listening in, you also get access to our patron-only podcast, which, while we don't have one this week, we'll have another one next week because we run them every couple of weeks, and hopefully Matt will press record this time?
I'm trying. It's hard, okay? By the way, I just posted it in Gate 16. By the way, where you can join us for all the Canucks chat you can think of, I just posted a picture of former Canuck legend Mike McKenna's new gear with the Flyers. Oh, man, it is. He's spitting fire with this thing. You guys got to check this out. Anna, I know you saw it.
Yeah, that is pretty sweet. I'm a big fan of, like, solid color blocks, like Markstrom's pads last year. They looked really sick to me. So, yeah, I am a big fan of this. And
yeah, it's
I
a just beaut. Have, it's a beaut.
I do have one question. Mike McKenna for Ring of Honor?
Maybe next year.
Not before Tom Pyatt goes in, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Baby brother of also another Canuck legend.
But for those of you who do want to check us out on Patreon, it's patreon.com/C4podcast. And for Discord, Gate 16, which Matt just referred to, you can join us in Discord by going to bit.ly/C4Discord. C4 Discord, all caps, and it's bit.ly when I say bit.ly, if it wasn't already clear. But Matt, any final words of wisdom you wish to share with our listeners?
Looking forward to seeing all your beautiful faces next week in studio at the Vancouver Public Library. I am so glad that we are back at it after the holiday break and looking forward to more Canucks chat. A special shout out to the Evans brothers, who I know are traveling across Canada right now. They were with the Canucks on that Eastern road trip, and they're heading over to Vancouver right now. They will be at the Canucks and Panthers game, I believe, this coming Sunday. Anna and myself will be with the Larscheiders. We're looking forward to meeting you, Evans brothers. We would love to get a picture with you guys, shake hands, just get to know you. We love to get to know every one of our listeners, whether it's in person or online. So definitely hook up with Anna and myself at the game when you're in town.
Adam.
Yeah, just want to say thanks, everyone, for putting up with the funky audio and technical issues we've had today. And also, Matt, big congratulations to you on your fantasy football championship.
Thanks, buddy. You're the only one out of all these schmucks who brought it up. I won my fantasy football title.
No one cares.
And crushed my opponent like a grape. For those interested, I will also let them ask me about it in off topic or something like that. Adam also won his fantasy football championship. I think Adam, you can correct me if I'm wrong. This will be your last thought. But did you go undefeated in your whole season?
I sure did. It was a wire to wire victory. Felt pretty good. But Matt, you were a big help the entire season.
I can't believe we just spoke about that.
Of course I was. Hey, Adam, would you rather me talk about Overwatch? You got to pick the lesser of the two evils here.
I actually don't know which is worse. I am actually, like, even more mad at NFL than I usually would be, because we had to, like, call around, like, 10 bars before we found somewhere that would play the Canucks game at the weekend. And then some dumb Seahawks fans turned up and asked us to put the, like, NFL on instead. Yeah. I was mad.
I would quickly say, this will be my last thought before I let you guys go. Anna, I'm surprised you didn't come back from London and you were talking more British-y than usual, because you still seem to be very Canadianized, except the fact that you said lift instead of elevator today.
Well, my parents always point out that I sound very Canadian on this podcast, and so I do think you guys are the bad influence, but I don't think 9 days was enough to really get my British back, but I will say I do constantly worry that I'm losing my English accent and my Englishness, my Britishness, I should say.
You sound like you're from London.
Yeah. Aww. But I was literally on a bus in London and the bus went past our stop, even though we had rung the bell. And my first reaction to it was just to yell, mate. So I do think my Britishness is still pretty ingrained.
Hey, do you think the bus driver, when you get off the bus in the old country?
Not usually in London, but I do, because...
Mm-hmm. Well, you're now Canadian.
Also, yeah, I lived in Manchester where people did it. So they're more polite outside of London.
Interesting. Well, on behalf of Matt Lee at Matt Lee_61, Adam Forsyth, or Anna Forsyth at A4Sy03.
That is two times you did that.
Yeah, I really feel very uncomfortable about that.
I am off my game.
You're like that guy who writes 2018 on his stationery right now, and we're clearly in 2019.
Hey, I have not put myself in a position where I can even write the date for that very reason. I'd be that guy. Adam Ovenel-Carter, Adam FOC, who's joining us from the great beyond, Bowen Island, where the internet is shaky and the audio is like... Well, I'm not suggesting he's dead, but let me tell you...
Isn't that what the great beyond means?
He might as well be dead.
Yeah, I mean, it's been difficult. It's been a challenge.
I would be devastated if you were to be gone, by the way. Yeah.
But I'm not going to let him speak, because then I have to go and mute myself. But on behalf of the four of us, I thank you for tuning into the C4 Podcast. If you're looking for us still online, we're at the C4 Podcast on Twitter. It's facebook.com/C4Podcast, and CanucksLikeYouDoLike.com is where you can find us as well. If you want to give us a review, please let us know how much you love us on iTunes, on Stitcher, every podcast site that you can find. Google us. Tell everyone how awesome we are or how crap we are. Just remember, as Anna says, 5 out of 5 stars is what's most important. But with all of that said, we're out.
Thanks for listening to the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com.